Today's episode of Trackin' Food on the Mid-Range Podcast Network is brought to you by Scout. If you're wanting to learn more about Vancouver's food and cultural sphere with regards to community news, new restaurant openings, essential guides to some of the city's best offerings, as well as who's hiring, Scout is where you should go. You can find them at scoutmagazine.ca. That's scoutmagazine.ca. And if you're on Vancouver Island, they also have a sister website called Islandist. Same type of content, only island-driven. That's islandist.ca. We're proud to have Scout as our presenting sponsor, as we believe what they scout out is an excellent complement to what we're offering here on Trackin' Food. Do check them out. Once again, that's scoutmagazine.ca. To the Track and Food Podcast. You're joining us on another kind of cloudy Sunday afternoon today. My name is Jamie Ma. I'm your host, as always. And sitting in front of me today with a nice shitty grin is my co-host, Mickey McLeod. How are you today, Mickey?
In person!
Yes,
we're in person. It's been years! Well, it's been months, but it feels like years.
Feels like years.
Yeah.
So you are indeed 6 feet away from me, that is for sure. You are probably seven feet. I'd say you're like 8 feet away from me.
At least, yeah. Yes, but it's very nice to be back in person because, as anyone who listens to the show knows, that our last five episodes, I think. Have all been remotely done. Yeah.
Well, this one too, because we our guests that we had on today are remote. We didn't actually get to see them in person as well. But
yes. And also, people listening might be confused, but this is the new intro format, which we're going a little bit more pro with it, a little bit.
Yeah, we're learning.
Yeah. So we have a new intro. It's going to be an episode, obviously, that Jamie was just saying that we previously taped, and then us also in person because we just couldn't wait any longer. Now that we're on just the precipice of phase three of the lockdown, we couldn't wait any longer to be in person. So
yeah, no, it's good. And we have beers in hand, so cheers, John.
Beers in hand.
Cheers, Mickey.
I can't remember the last time I drank a beer on the Track and Food Podcast.
It's been a while. It's been quite a while.
And, and listener, Jamie splurged. He got me the Four Winds Pilsner. And what are you drinking over there, sir?
I'm drinking the 33 Acres of Darkness right now.
Ugh, so. Man. I will admit I have been a little starved for craft beer. The whole boxed wine thing, the boxed house white thing was kind of a joke, but like I was drinking really low quality wine, but it's nice to get a nice quality BC craft beer in my mouth.
Well, this is the first time I've been in your place in a couple months, so I felt like I had to
I had to bring
some quality beers for you.
You came in clutch, pro man. I like it.
I did. Yes. Yeah. So but it's no, this is good. We're back together. We're probably a lot of our interviews moving forward are probably going to still be virtual.
But maybe we'll see. I mean,
we'll see how it goes.
We can be, you know, as long as we're distanced, we can be in the same space now. I think it's morally acute to do that now. But obviously for certain situations, we will have remote guests, but yeah. Definitely we'll be making a more concerned effort, you know, to bring you the comedic timing of that can only happen when you're in the same presence of a guest.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I mean, like doing them when you
it's
don't
weird,
see,
eh?
It's hard. It sucks.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of it. I mean, like, I mean, it works. You can do it. I mean, but I'm sure everyone right now in the world is probably zoomed out. But I'm not like, I mean, it's harder to have a conversation with someone when you can't actually see their
It's hard to have a candid reactionary conversation.
I will admit that our last episode with James and Carrie was fantastic.
Yeah.
And even though weren't able to kind of sit and actually chat with them in person, we did get some great content out. And I want to thank all the guests that have come on the podcast recently. It's been, this has definitely been a trying process for all of us. It's been weird. But it looks like hopefully, you know, as long as a lot of us, you know, maintains a lot of those safe protocols, stays safe, and takes care of each other.
And actually, to echo your point, it has been strange for us personally because, you know, people listening to the show, obviously, you know, we have a very sort of like off the cuff, relaxed atmosphere in our show usually. But we had to, just for prospective listener, Jamie and I made a decision when this first started whether we wanted to keep going with the podcast or not. And then based on a couple of conversations with a couple of different people and some fans of the show reaching out, we decided that we were going to move forward with it. And I'm super happy we decided to do that because we could have easily just taken the spring off, right? But it was very important for all of our previous guests that have come on to share their stories and share their insight on what's actually happening. And hopefully we are coming a little bit out of that, and there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, but we're still years away from what the effect of this whole thing has been. But so again, I want to echo what you said, is thank all the guests that have come on so far and been very candid and sharing their personal stories of what's been going on over the last 3 months in our city, and not only the city, but the world and our industry.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, like, there's some amazing people out there doing some amazing work. And yeah, I mean, I feel very grateful that they were willing to come on and share their stories. And, you know, and it's, I mean, we are coming through it. I mean, it's you know,
people are on the streets, man. It's cars are out.
It's,
I was on my bike. I rode by local and Kits.
Restaurants
and, like,
are open.
Like, you could tell that they had taken half the seating out, but it was like packed. And like, people were at the bar, but they were spaced out. And like, I mean, packed in like a respectful manner.
Well, you know, the one thing that I find very interesting, so I watched Bill Maher this past week on Friday. And so he always does his new rules. And at the end of the show, he generally has like a short monologue on some thoughts that he feels like, you know, the society could work on. He talks about this, like, he's like saying right now, like, airlines are open and all stuff, and, you know, we can fly everywhere. And so he's just kind of frustrated, like, why are certain industries and why are they open, why other ones are not? Do you think, I'm kind of curious about this, because you and I are both huge sports fans. Do you think fans should be allowed to be together
in the arenas?
So, prime example, what he was pointing out was the fact that, like, you can be on a flight right now that can be full.
Right. And that's how many people on a flight, like 160 or whatever.
Yeah. So then his idea.
I just put that number like completely out of my ass.
But then,
I have no
but then
idea.
His idea was just like, why can't we have like full stadiums then? Like, what's the difference? I'm not saying I'm on either one of his sides. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I agree with him, because I definitely think that we need to have a lot of caution here.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that, but I just thought his point was really interesting. So I was kind of curious about that stuff.
I feel like there's about half of the world that has kind of just like phoned it in, and they're like, well, we're just going to choose, you know, finance and economy over lives. Mm-hmm. And half the world has been like, no, well, we actually more value our lives. So, I mean, we're not going to be able to, yeah, those industries that need to run on those kinds of numbers coming in terms of monetary numbers. Whereas like, you have a stadium full of, you know, 18,000 people, you know, 25,000
people. Very irresponsible
to
have that right now.
That's my viewpoint. But like,
yeah, that's mine too. I think that'd be extremely irresponsible.
Yeah. When you're talking, like, I'm sure if you were to poll the NBA's general manager, or sorry, the owners, I'm sure it'd be split 50-50. Someone would be like, well, no, this is way too soon. And someone would be like, yeah, let's get this shit going again. So,
however, there's been studies coming out of China recently. They're saying that like, they're trying to link certain things, like how you get COVID and like what you need to have for to be exposed to it and stuff like this. And they're saying that like, if you're outdoors, your chances of getting COVID are like marginally.
It drops drastically. Yeah. The percentage goes down
pretty much almost like
exponentially.
It's like slim.
Very slim. Yeah.
So like, why couldn't you be at a baseball game then?
I think
because it's outdoors.
Well, but there's also indoor elements of a baseball stadium.
Oh, no, I'm just
washrooms,
saying. No, I'm
there's
just, I understand
concession
that.
Stands.
So, but it's, I mean, there's just all these things, right? So it's just like, I can see how people have all these conflicting thoughts in their heads. And I feel it too sometimes. Sometimes I think, why aren't we open? But then sometimes I'm like, no, I mean, at the end of the day, I value lives and I want to make sure that we're all safe and people take care of themselves. But yeah, this whole time has just been weird. It's been a weird time.
And yeah.
Yeah. I like listening to Bill Maher sometimes, because I think he just pushes the buttons.
I don't think I've ever listened to or seen a Bill Maher show in my life, or even like heard him talk, just to be honest.
He's awesome. I love
him. Maybe during the Trump election, I was like tuning into some of his stuff. Yeah. Like, just that was on YouTube or whatever. But
well, my favorite part about watching him is he'll just tell guests to fuck off. He's like, it's pretty
I'm funny. Into that, yeah.
So, which is good.
I tell guests on our show all the time to fuck off, but with my eyes, not with my words.
You've told me to fuck off.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of sports, that's one of these industries that we as society are going to have to look at and be like, what is important to us, and what, I mean, obviously we need, as humans, we need entertainment. Mm-hmm. That's part of, we need love. We need physical contact. We need our brains to be stimulated. And we do that with many different things, like, you know, films and music and art and sports and competition. And that's very important, but we need to like maybe decide on like how that's going to look moving forward. Yeah. That's responsible to your fellow man and womankind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Hopefully a lot of good things come out of this. There's a lot of brave people out there doing really great, great stuff. And we're very lucky to live here in BC, and we have a great healthcare system. And I feel like Trudeau, the government's done a really good job with us and making sure that people have been able to get money, access to things. And, you know, I feel like I'm optimistic, especially after this conversation that we had. So today's guests, we were very lucky, and the guests that we brought on today, I've wanted them on for quite a long time. I have a ton of admiration and respect for them. So we were lucky enough to get Paul Grunberg and Romano Castillo. Paul is the owner, one of the co-owners of Savio Volpe and Latana and Pepino Spaghetti House here in Vancouver. I've known Paul for over 10 years. I've known Romano for probably a good 6-7 years now. class acts, some of the most respected restaurateurs in Vancouver. I have a ton of respect for them. Paul is someone that I just think is so competitive and so smart and so just has so much drive and has, you know, he's really dedicated to making sure the hospitality is, you know, I feel like he's kind of in a lot of ways, he's kind of like the Danny Meyer of Vancouver.
And absolutely.
I have a, you know, so having them on today, we're very lucky for that. And I think he comes across as someone who gives me a lot of optimism for the restaurant community. And I'm starting to see that with a lot of people. I think the great thing about our community is the fact that, you know, we were thrown a pretty heavy handed curveball here with COVID, and it's been really hard for a lot of people and scary. But restaurateurs, people that love this industry, they're very resilient, they're very adaptive, and they're very smart, and they're very creative. And all the stuff that we've seen through a lot of the great restaurants and a lot of people that we've had on, they've found a way to navigate and found a way to stay alive. And we're starting to reopen, and I'm very confident that a lot of good things are going to come from this. And Paul talks about that in this interview that we have today, and he's very optimistic. And you know, it's really cool to see. It's really nice to see people like that who are, you know, not going to be daunted and not going to give up. But that, and Romano's just awesome. He's that GM and that maitre d' that you want. Someone who's just got that great smile and someone who just always makes sure that you feel welcome when you go to the restaurant. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked that we got those guys today. So
yeah, if you're feeling a little down and a little overwhelmed with what's going on right now, hopefully this little discussion we had will pick up your spirits, because it definitely has picked up mine.
We are very excited for this interview. I hope you guys enjoy it. But Mickey, I'm kind of curious. I'm going to ask you one question.
Oh, okay.
So Last Dance is finished.
Quick question before we get into the...
Last Dance was finished.
Yep.
You watched it all?
Mm-hmm.
If you were to do another documentary of that sort, what would you pick?
In the basketball world?
Yeah. Would you do Shaq and Kobe Lakers?
I wouldn't do Shaq and Kobe Lakers. I would probably think more... It's difficult.
Golden State Warriors?
Golden State would be a good one. I mean, you could just do LeBron with any team he was at. But I don't think there's a lot of... LeBron doesn't really have a lot of negative like press. He's pretty much a pro at everything he does.
We don't need negative a documentary like this.
No, but there's a lot of like, you know, just the reactions from all the things and like the Horace Grant stuff. And like, there's a lot of finger pointing. And I feel like just because at that time, the 90s, that was kind of more of a style play of basketball. I guess the Shaq Kobe Lakers would be good, but that's only 3 years. So
no, they were together for 8 years.
No, but like
they won for 3 years, but right, they were together for 8 years.
Right.
Problem yeah, is, you I'd know, go Kobe,
Steve Nash, and the Suns. That'd be mine.
Really?
No, I'm just joking.
Actually, no. Interesting.
No. I don't think you could. I mean, obviously, you could go 60s Celtics, but you wouldn't have the people to interview, and it'd be different. But it's unique in a way that they are probably one of the most unique dynasties of all time, just because it was on the forefront of bringing the game to a global level, and there were so many things and factors going on that was all new to everyone who was involved. So I don't think you'd be able to find a point in time like a hyper micro point in time where that all was happening.
I know who I would take.
Oh, I know who you would take too.
I mean, I would want something with Kobe, but I would know. Yeah. What I would do is I would do a 10-part series on the Magic Bird rivalry.
Sure, yeah.
Like really dig deep, get all the players, get like kind of just build that whole kind of mystique.
Yeah. I love how Larry was okay with him leaving in that, all his swearing and stuff, like in the underground bowels of the arenas and stuff like that. And I want to say one thing on this series. Everyone is reaction to how Scottie Pippen was portrayed, I think, is overblown, because in my view and how the history unfolded with those events, those were things you had to talk about. Like, it's unfortunate that he was involved in all of those five major things. But for everyone to be like, oh, he was painted such poorly, he wasn't. Jordan says in the documentary that he was his ride or die. Like, he was the best player he's ever played with. It just so happens that Scotty was involved in those situations. And if you're doing a documentary that is supposed to have all of the nuts and bolts and details of the situation, you have to include that all. So I don't think he was portrayed in negative light at all. But I'm like the only one. I'm not a Scottie Pippen hater. I love Pip.
No, I feel the same
best.
Way. I feel the same way.
All right. That's my only rant. I'm going to go on.
All right.
People need to listen to the actual show.
Okay. We hope you enjoy this episode. It's with Paul Grunberg of Savio Volpe and Romano Castillo. We thank you for listening and all your support, and enjoy the episode. Paul Grunberg and Romano Castillo, gentlemen, thank you for joining us today on the Tractor Food Podcast. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Doing great. Thanks. How are you?
I'm wonderful. This has actually been something that I've wanted to do for quite a while. Actually, I've been a big fan of both of you guys for a long, long time. This has kind of been trying times for all of us during this COVID experience, and you two
are some of the more respected and revered people in this industry. So I'm really excited to have you guys on today and talk about kind of how you guys have been responding to this whole pandemic and life as restaurateurs and someone who works that whole industry and everything like this. So I guess my first question for both of you today really simply is, how are you guys doing? How has this process been for you guys today and today and over the last couple of months? And I guess moving into the future, I guess we'll start with you, Paul. How are you dealing?
I'm feeling pretty good. I feel like every day I wake up to new challenges that force me to be dynamic and creative and patient. I feel like this COVID situation has made me a better business owner and a little bit smarter, a little bit more wily. And I'm optimistic and I constantly am seeing silver linings and constantly seeing ways to come out of this as whole as possible. So generally, I wake up every morning happy and positive and chatty. And my wife says, hey, will you just give me a minute? I'm just having my morning coffee before you start yammering. So generally speaking, things are good.
Romano, can you confirm this? Is Paul in good spirits?
Hi, Jimmy. Firstly, thank you for having us today. I do have to agree with Paul that, you know, it's nice to see him kind of back in the captain's seat, in the chariot. You know, I've worked with Paul for a very long time, and I've seen him evolve as an owner. And I you know, and it's true because, you know, I mean, from the days at Laboratoire when he first opened Laboratoire, you know, he was very like on the floor. I look up to this guy, and it's nice to see him back in a creative, not to say that he was ever gone, but he's definitely like, these times have really shown a different side of Paul that I would have to say is like, it inspires me again, because, you know, like, it's a different times, and the way that Paul is adapting is it really inspiring me to adapt with him, because, you know, I've been very loyal, and it goes both ways. He's been very loyal to me, and I think the fact that we're doing this together is, I wouldn't want it any other way, truthfully.
And how are you doing? How's this been with you? I mean, you and I and Mickey, I mean, we're all of us, actually. We all work in the front lines of working in hospitality. I mean, having guests taken away from us is a pretty, pretty hard thing. And I mean, you're always at the front lines with the restaurant. I mean, I love coming to see you at Pepino's and Latana and stuff like this.
Totally.
How's that been for you to have kind of that experience taken away? I mean, it's kind of weird to have to shift your entire kind of business to kind of doing takeout and delivery. I mean,
yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, it. Every day I wake up and I still wonder: is this how it is? Is this what it's like now? Is this life? And I kind of have to just, you know, remind myself that it is. And you know what? No matter, you know, what life throws at you, i.e. COVID, you kind of just have to work hard and adapt. And I think that's what's keeping me going and keeping me motivated. Of course, I miss the restaurants. Of course, I miss serving people like you or any one of my regulars or new faces alike. I can't, you know, I can't wait to do that again one day. But at the same time, this is life. And in order for me to continue to support my family and to support myself and to grow, you know, it's important that I push on. And, you know, if I have to deliver groceries, then so be it. That's what I'm doing right now to make it so that we have a business to run and a business to come to.
Was the shift for you guys going from running restaurants, I mean, obviously with Savio Volpe and Pepino's and Latana, was the shift going from that model to delivery and takeout, was that a hard shift, or was it pretty easy for you guys to kind of flip over?
We didn't have a choice, Jamie. And where I come from, you don't sit back and lick your wounds. You get up and you fight. And that's exactly what we did. We, you know, we broke down Savio really quick. We emptied the coolers. We gave away a bunch of food. We brought a bunch of food down to Latana to sell there. Thank God that place is a grocery store. Like, that's what it's zoned for. So we were able to pivot fairly quickly to do sort of in-house grocery there, which was great. And then we quickly moved into an online position, online specialty grocery, which you can see now the online grocery thing is going fairly okay. And the restaurants are doing takeout delivery, and it's paying the bills, and that's better than not paying the bills as far as I'm concerned. And now coming into June 1st reopening of Savio Volpe, and coming into June 1st, we're now starting to actualize what the next phase looks like. and that phase looks like Sabio Volpe will be open June 1st, 7 nights a week, 5 p.m. till close. You know, business as usual there with capacity limitations. So we've implemented systems and protocols and safety measures that are fantastic, and a lot of training, and that's being headed up by Caitlin, who's our ops manager, and she's doing a lovely job steering that ship. And Pepino's, it's a bit more of a challenge because of the space of Pepino's and there's no windows. So we don't really feel like June is the right time to reopen Pepino's. So we're going to focus continually on takeout and delivery there, and perhaps even add a side hustle, which is super exciting that we're working on. Latana, we're going to continue to grow the online and in-store experience, which is going really well. So continue to market that, continue to grow that business, because that's really the future for Cafe Latana. We're really happy with the direction it's going right now. We've got a really great team and everyone's pulling their weight and then some.
Have you been able to maintain a good amount of your staff throughout this whole thing, or have you had to?
When we pushed the red button back in, I think, March 15th, effectively, I laid off about 130 associates.
Okay.
And I retained about, I would say, about a dozen I retained. Now with the, over the last 2.5 months, we've slowly grown that dozen to approximately about 35 associates company-wide. So that's who we've been working with. There's been a core of about 35 between the three properties. And now with the reopening, we're probably going to shoot back up to about 50 associates, because Sabio is only at 50%. So, you know, you can do the math. So, I think we're doing everything we can to hire people. But to be totally honest with you, a lot of associates aren't ready to come back. We're only giving our associates at Sabio a very limited part-time schedule, because we really respect people's needs as far as workload and how much they're willing to take on, because it is still an uncertain environment for all of us. And I respect that. And we're taking it slow, and we're keeping our associates' safety our number one priority. And just listening to them and empathizing and doing whatever we can to support them come back to work. Additionally, I've made a company-wide commitment to pay all my associates, all my hourly associates, above minimum wage for the indefinite future, because I feel like it's the right thing to do. And it's exactly what the wage subsidy is for, is to try to pay your staff as much as you can, because they're only working limited hours. So I'm just trying to do my part as a business owner and as a human in supporting my team across the board.
So you applied and received the wage subsidy? Was that a...
Yeah, it's been great, actually. The wage subsidy has been the number one tool that the government has put out there. It's been great. We've successfully applied and been remunerated for 2 rounds of the wage subsidy, and we're looking forward to the 3rd round, which I believe goes live early June. And it's worked really well, because it directly applies to my businesses, because I am employing people, I am paying them, no one's taken a haircut per se. It's great. I know I'll eventually have to pay tax on that money, but I'll worry about that down the road.
And the wage subsidy is it's 75%. Is that what it is?
Yeah, there's a calculation. Don't quote me on it, but it's 75% up to $875 a week and up to a $55,000 salary. So basically, it's approximately 75% within some constraints, and you don't have to prove now, but you're going to have to prove down the road if CRA comes knocking, which they probably will, that you suffered losses of a minimum 30%, which is a threshold that most people, I would say, are hitting, as opposed to the commercial rent relief program, where government has implemented a 70% loss, which is really tough, because if your business has essentially lost 70% of revenue, that basically means you've been closed for probably most of COVID. So I'm working with both sets of our landlords, and they've been very receptive on working in creative solutions to help with the rent. We've been on deferrals right now, and I'm speaking with them as of this morning on how we're going to potentially implement a little bit of the rent relief program and a little bit of the deferral, because quite frankly, everyone's taking haircuts these days, and the more supportive you are now, the better look it is on you in the future. I think that's what's important to remember is you want to make sure you're on the right side of the fence during this time, and you will be remembered for your actions. So I think it's important to sort of stay true to your moral code and be a good fucking human and help support one another. And I'm actually, sorry to haggle on here, but I'm actually hopeful that the future will bring a much more supportive community feel. And I've said this in other interviews I've done, and I really have appreciated how much people have supported one another during this time. We've been heavily involved with a program we set up called Healthcare Heroes. I know that there's other programs out there that are, you know, donating food to the less fortunate, donating food to the frontline associates. And I know that that happens on a daily as it is, but it would be nice to see that continue in the future. I don't know why there had to have been a pandemic for us all to sort of pull up our bootstraps in that regard and give a little bit more and take a little bit less. I think it's been a really, really nice to see. And I'm really proud of my team and everything we've done to support the community. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
No, I totally does. And I think I 100% totally agree with you when you say those sentiments, in the sense that, like, it's funny how the human condition forces us whenever we're stressed to kind of come out of our shell a little bit and kind of get out of our tunnel vision of ourselves and kind of think about, you know, the greater, bigger picture, and realizing that, you know, this pandemic is, I've written about this and I've talked to you about this. I mean, on the last episode that we did with Carrie and James, and when we had Brandon on, and then even Dala from Super Baba, I mean, we all talked about this, and I've been noticing, and as you're saying right now, how much the community has kind of come together, especially the restaurant community, a community that's generally more fragmented and very competitive with each other.
Totally.
And
totally.
It's nice to see a lot of restaurateurs and a lot of people in the industry kind of banding together, getting together and wanting to kind of support each other and realizing that we're all in this together and that everyone surviving this is better for the greater good. And it's greater. It's better for the overall industry. And so, you know, I've noticed on Instagram and stuff like this, the stuff that you guys are doing with the hospitals and stuff like that. And, you know, I commend you guys for that. That's fantastic. And, you know, when talking with Carrie last time, how she set up with that food coalition, you know, she was saying that we started this because obviously we needed to make sure that we help the local farming community, but also our restaurant. But she even said, she was like, I want this to continue. I don't want this to stop once, you know, everything starts to return to normal. And I couldn't agree with you more on that one. So it's interesting that's how that works with human beings, but hopefully we'll take this bit of generosity and hopefully we'll keep finding ways to make sure that we keep it up.
Yeah, it's all about the silver linings, my friend. Well said.
Has delivery and takeout been, like you were saying, that it's paying the bills and everything, but have you guys been getting a good reception from your customers and stuff like this? Has it been more received than you probably expected? Or, because I mean, you guys have food that I think travels pretty good.
Yeah, we're really lucky that, first of all, that we both Pepino's and Sabio are in communities and they're not downtown. I feel like the downtown core has been greatly affected by this, because there's no one down there and no one wants to drive into downtown for pickup. So I feel like we've been lucky in that regard. And yeah, I agree. Our food travels really well. Pepino's obviously is like 12 out of 10 comfort food. And Sabio is just so fresh and beautiful and bright, and it travels really well. So
nice. Another question I'm curious for you guys is, there's been a lot of stuff been written about, especially on Eater. I mean, there was an op-ed that Andrew posted recently by a gentleman talking about, like, how before we go back to kind of status quo and stuff like that, especially with the restaurant community, that the restaurant community was broken. And I was actually just listening to a great interview done on the Eater Digest podcast with Amanda Klute, and she did an interview with Nick Kokonis, who is one of the owner. He's the owner of Talk, the delivery app, and then obviously Alinea and the Aviary and all that stuff in Chicago, very well known. He's been a big proponent saying about, like, how the restaurant community, you know, is, you know, if you're running a restaurant right now and you're only making 4% profits, you're probably running a really good business. Is there, from seeing how this has affected you guys and how it's affected everyone, do you feel like there's things that, like, as yourself, you're saying that you're having to be more nimble and kind of be more creative about changing your business? Is there things you're learning now that you, or you could even see with other restaurateurs, how we could fix the community and fix the industry? Some people are saying, you know, getting away with tipping. Some people are saying that we need to raise prices and that we need to better practices and stuff like this. And I don't know. I mean, like, I'm just kind of curious if you guys have any thoughts on this idea.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I do agree that, you know, the way that the, I guess, the restaurants and the economy kind of was running pre-COVID, and the kind of the, you know, the issues that were in the industry around the world, or like around North America, for example, it's kind of interesting to see how we're all kind of working now. Like, for example, you know, a lot of income was tip, right? And that's based on people that are coming into your restaurant and based on service that you give. Whereas now, you know, with takeout and delivery, yeah, it is a service and it is a certain experience, but there is no actual service aspect where people are inclined to tip. So that being said, like Paul said earlier, he feels that it is important to take care of your staff. So, you know, he's paying everyone above minimum wage just so that people are comfortable in their lifestyle and in their means of living. And who's to say that's going to change? Like after post-COVID, are we going to go back to paying a minimum wage? Or is the economy going to be comfortable tipping the way they used to be when restaurants reopen? So it's hard to say, you know, what's going to become of this. But yes, I think that the restaurant industry as a whole will definitely not come back to what it used to be.
Until there's a vaccine, which is probably, you know, there's been some advances made in Canada. I think, where is it in Canada? Saskatchewan?
I think Saskatchewan, yeah. They're actually my old university, University of Saskatchewan, and then I think there's some stuff out in Halifax, I think is another area.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky. First of all, we're lucky to live where we live, not to mention, you know, British Columbia is probably the best and safest place to be in the world right now, thanks to the rapid response that, you know, Dr. Bonnie Henry, Justin Trudeau, Adrian Dix, Horgan, all these guys, you know, like them or not, I believe that we've been under the best possible leadership during the hardest time. You know, if you take a look at our neighbors, the United States is in really rough shape. And it's not because of the people necessarily, it's because of the leadership. And regarding the restaurant industry in itself, I feel like the restaurant industry, to say that the restaurant industry is broken, I'm not sure, to be honest, because I think if you break it out and you look at individual companies and what they're doing in restaurants, there's a way that you can make your associates feel good about what they're doing. And there's a way that compensation can work. And I feel like on a more granular level, it's up to the restaurant owner and the ownership team and the leadership team to create safe, healthy environments. And I don't think it's always about the money. And I say this time and time again, is you can't just throw money at a problem. Not everyone is here for the money. If you can offer an environment, like I said, that are safe, inviting, warm, and you know, you've got great clientele, you've got a great food program, that's a good recipe for success. I feel everything else, like, you know, constantly talking about, you know, the inequality between front and back of house and the tip structure. Well, you know what? No one's saying you can't change that as an owner. You can start in your own yard and work on your own team and then let it work, and then more people will catch on. Mm-hmm. I think it comes down to the responsibility of the ownership team and leadership team to make positive change and create those safe environments for your staff. Because I'll tell you something, my companies, and you know, I've been in restaurant industry for over 20 years. I've been an owner since Laboratoire. I don't know when did Lab.
2010.
Yeah, I've been an owner for 10 years. I've owned four or five different companies, and I've always had fucking amazing staff that have always been so fucking loyal and been amazing and fantastic. And I can lift my head high, knowing that I've always treated people with kindness and respect, and I've not ever underpaid or overpaid. I've always been fair, and I've never thought it was about the money, but I've always offered a safe, healthy environment for my associates to work in. And I think that's where it starts. Once those issues are addressed, the inequalities can be addressed as well. And I do think that there is inequality between tipping and front of house and back of house. And my companies, it's fairly even, Steven. You know, talk to any of my back of house associates and any of my front of house associates, I think they feel pretty good about how we distribute gratuity. Mm-hmm. I've never had any pushback. I've never had anyone have any issue. And I think that we do a fine job. I also offer medical benefits to all my associates. Currently, those benefits are furloughed until we get through COVID, because obviously it's been an expense that not necessary. It's a hot topic. It's never going to go away. And I think you just have to manage it internally until we can get a bigger solution on the table. And I think that that solution also involves the higher powers in terms of maybe specific subsidies. Maybe we can go back to a 20% wholesale discount at the BCLDB. Like, Jesus Christ, like, give me a break. Like, that's the first thing that needs to happen, is the margins in the restaurant industry need to increase in order for us to pay our staff more. And the rents that we're paying, they're all high. But look, no one's got a fucking gun to your head. If you don't want to work in the restaurant industry, don't work in the restaurant industry. There's plenty of employment out there, especially now. Now is a good time to make a change. If you don't like your job, if you don't like what you're doing, if you don't like your boss, you don't like your coworker, make the change. You know, there's that saying, I think it's Gandhi, who says, be the change you want to see in the world. Well, you know what? Now's a perfect fucking time. And I'm going to go and do me, and I'm going to continue to do what's best for my associates and my companies and my family, and you do you, and I'll see you on the other side. But let's try and work together in the meantime. How about that?
I love it. It's great. I mean, it's, I've talked to so many people recently who've, you know, questioned their some of their jobs they might not be going back to, or it's going to be completely different. They're like, I don't really know if I love my job that much. And, you know, I work in the industry, and some people love it. Some people are kind of like iffy, and, you know, some people are in it just for the money. And yeah, I mean, what's any career? I mean, anybody that's been affected by this right now. So yeah, I think you definitely touched on something like, you know, this is a great time for you to maybe consider, you know, new opportunities and new challenges, and look for what makes you happy and stuff like this. And I think at the end of the day, I think you strike a great chord there when you say, you know, take care of all those aspects that you can control, and at the end of the day, you're probably going to find yourself having a successful company and successful business. And I think that's a great way to look at it. It's interesting how Kokonis did say that, though, because I thought that was really interesting in the interview, because he was rambling on about, you know, restaurants and the community, and he was saying that how David Chang has come across as being very pessimistic about how he's saying the restaurant industry is never going to come back, and, you know, and all that stuff. And I love David Chang. His podcast is really cool, and I respect him a lot. But he's basically, and Kokonis was coming across trying to say, you know what, I'm very optimistic. I think that you know, instead of sitting back on crying spilled milk about how things have kind of been thrown your way, just kind of get up and kind of, you know, like you said earlier, like, you know, you were forced to make these changes. You weren't going to sit there and just wait for someone to come help you. You know, you had to kind of adapt and figure it out. And I thought it was interesting because when he did say that, you know, if you're running a restaurant right now and you're only making 4% or 3% profit, and he's like, you're probably not running your business properly. You're probably not running it. And so I found that very interesting because, I mean, I've heard a lot of restaurateurs say those margins, and it just made me think, I'm like, maybe is he right? Or maybe is he just doing something different? But
what's he saying, that 4% pre-COVID or during COVID, he's saying that?
Pre-COVID.
Yeah. Look, the national average, I believe, for restaurants in Canada is, I think, 2 to 3 or 4% profit. I can tell you that it's hard to make a profit in this business, but you know, if your restaurants are busy and you've got your costs lined up, and you can make money for sure. Otherwise, people wouldn't be doing it. So give me a break, right? But look, I do want to just say this: like, I can't reiterate enough that I agree with him that you don't sit back and lick your wounds. You get up and you fight, and you have a greater responsibility to your team, your family, to keep pushing, keep pushing until you can't push anymore. And I'm a son of an immigrant, and that's the immigrant way. And that's my way. And I believe a lot of my restaurant community friends out there have done the exact same things. And I applaud them greatly for their efforts. There was a time 2 weeks into this COVID situation where I went for a really rare little hike out in the North Shore with my wife. That's where we live. And I said to her, I said, fuck, Emily, did I fuck up? Did I make a mistake by staying open? Because everyone was not open. Everyone was like, no, I'm just going to wait it out. And, you know, she was obviously reassuring, and I'm really glad I did what I did. I'm really pleased with where we're at and how we handled this pandemic as a team.
This hasn't been easy on anyone. I mean, and I'm sure that there's been a lot of those days for a lot of people where they've kind of questioned the choices they've made. And it's hard. I mean, every day is different. Right? You know, tomorrow could be completely different for all of us. So I was kind of curious about one thing you brought up there about the wholesale pricing, because I've actually been in contact with David Ebby in his office, and we're trying to line that up and get them on the podcast here. So we're It looks like we might be getting them next month. But it's interesting how you brought that up about the wholesale pricing, because I've heard some rumblings about that, like that it's probably going to go through, hopefully, but there's been pushback from the union. I hope that comes your guys' way, because I know that would be a really big help for a lot of restaurateurs.
I know the BCRFA, James Aranizad, and I forget the gentleman's name now, but I sent a big, long letter to all the government leadership about a month ago, encouraging the 20% wholesale discount. And I know James has been advocating for all of us through the BCRFA. And I think it'll go through, because I think at the end of the day that's an incredible bonus for restaurateurs and business owners to order booze and get that discount. I mean, we used to get the 10% about 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and then it all went away like the dodo bird. So maybe if we can get that 20%, we can put that right back onto the consumer, and everyone's happy and having an extra glass of wine here and there in a safe, manageable way.
Are you going to be applying for a patio seating at Savio?
Yeah. You know, I was on the phone with a really great friend of mine. Her name's Krista. She has a consulting company, Blue Diamond Hospitality, and she is a really fantastic wrangler of licenses and permits. So I was asking her, I'm like, okay, so what's the deal? And I'm trying to get potentially a patio. I'm thinking about doing something at Pepino's in the parking lot, because the city of Vancouver and the province are being really easygoing about the process right now. So I'm thinking that Savio, maybe. The good thing about Savio is the interior is really beautiful and airy, and we've got a lot of safety measures in place. So I'm not overly desperate to put seating outside. More so, I think a holding area would be nice for people to have, you know, a spritz or a beer or a cold drink while they wait for their table. And I believe that's something that we can do now. But, you know, thinking about it, I just have a lot of balls in the air right now. So I'm probably going to get to that next week or the week after, to be honest.
I saw it, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but are you guys offering Chinar spritzes in the bottle?
Yeah, they're just so beautiful. Glassford and Walker, we work with them exclusively. And Phoebe is just brilliant. And Caitlin had this idea to do a bottled spritz, and it's there. And we're selling them in our picnic baskets at Savio, and we're going to sell them in the restaurant. We're going to get them down at Pepino's, and they're just beautiful. And who doesn't want like a takeaway spritz? They're already carbonated, ready to go. They're cold. You literally could just open it and drink it.
Oh, that's right what I thought. Because Chinar spritzes are what I drink every day usually.
Well, we'll have to get you one, Jamie.
I drink them every day during the afternoon for like lunch. It's always in my fridge. I'm kind of curious. How long? Okay, so you guys have been working together since Lavatoire. How did you guys first meet? Was it just Romano? Did you just come in and just, had you guys known each other beforehand?
That's a good story. We actually have known each other since I was the GM at Market by John George. And Romano is going to tell you a quick story about how we first met.
So I was, how old was I at the time? I must have been
like 2009.
Yeah. So I was 21. Okay. So story goes, I'm working away, you know, making money for myself to support my kid. And not sure what what direction I want to take with my career and what I want to do with my life. But I've always been interested in the hospitality industry. The Shangri-La Hotel is opening up that year. I think it was 2009, right, Paul? And an opportunity comes up for me to go and apply there. I refused the opportunity because I was quite intimidated at the time, and you know, I didn't feel like I had enough experience for such a prestigious kind of brand. So the time comes when the hotel is about to open, and I know nothing about restaurants at this point, but a family friend of mine insists that I go and apply at the hotel. So I muster up the courage and I go and take this interview in the cafeteria of the hotel, not knowing that I was going to meet Paul. No idea what it was for. I thought it was going to be honestly for the hotel, but it was actually for the restaurant. And Paul walks in, you know, he has his slick back hair. He's in a suit. I haven't seen him in a suit since those days, actually.
No, I don't.
He doesn't know any suits. That's the last time I've ever seen him in a suit. So he walks in and I'm like shaking in my boots. And the only thing he says to me is, "You got 2 feet and a heartbeat?" And I was like, "Yeah," like really weirded out, and I had no idea, like, what does that even mean? And he goes, "Great, come back tomorrow." And that was it. That was the end of the interview, if it was even an interview. I come back the next day, and it was for the restaurant. So I didn't know that, and the rest is history.
You know when you know, right, guys? The truth of the matter is that I worked for Jean-Georges, and the standard that Jean-Georges had was quite different from the standard of Shangri-La. Obviously, both standards are 5-star, but in terms of labor model, the expectations were very different. So when I was in New York planning this restaurant, my labor model was like triple to what the Shangri-La basically would approve, because it was a management deal. The Shangri-La pays the bills, but Jean-Georges is the name. And it's the best deal you could ever have if you're Jean-Georges, and that's how these guys do it. So he says his team that I was working with was basically like, yo, you need like 5 associates for every client. And the Shangri-La was like, no, you need like a quarter of an associate for every client, because the labor is much different in Canada than it is in the United States. So I was fairly short-staffed, I'm not going to lie to you. And it was a busy, busy first year. So when I saw Romano and I knew his pedigree from who he'd been referred from, which was a great kid named, I think, Julius probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just was like, yeah, you know what? Rock and roll. Like, what's with the long interview questions? Let's go. You know, you're young, you're a smart guy. Let's go to work. And that's it. That's always been my philosophy. And it's worked out.
So they brought you out to New York to kind of do...
Yeah, I was in New York for a month pre-opening from December to January. And what an experience. What an experience. And I became close with Jean-Georges. We even, you know, there's this magical moment in my life that I still am not even sure that it actually happened, where I was working at Trump Tower in Jean-Georges in 3-star. And I couldn't actually do anything there because it's a 3-star. So they don't really want you just to like run food randomly, because it's, you never know, you could get an inspector. So I was just at the pass standing there watching him. And I was just watching, you know, how you do a stage basically in a fairly high-end environment. And he comes up to me and he taps me on the shoulder and he's like, hey, when do you finish? And I'm like, in a very French accent. And he's this incredibly charming French man, very smart and genuine person. And he says, when are you finished? And I said, well, like, you know, that's kind of like up to you. But no one was really managing me. You know, I was just shooting around to all the restaurants, getting experience and learning the culture. And he's like, all right, meet me in the parkade in 20 minutes. And I'm like, okay. So I go, I quickly change down in the office in the doldrums of Trump Tower. And I go out back and I'm sitting in this parking garage, like very typical New York parking garage at Trump Tower. And all of a sudden on the car elevator comes up this big black G-Wagon, this Mercedes G-Wagon. And Jean-Georges is in the car, you know, looking like $1 million. And he says, hop in. And I'm like, okay. So we get in Jean-Georges's G-Wagon, and we drive all around New York that night. We dined at 5 or 6 different restaurants, some his and some his friends. And I tell you, it was the most incredible experience I've ever had in this industry, because I was sitting next to Jean-Georges, communicating with him, talking about life and family and restaurants. And we went out and ate together. I met all his amazing business partners. And everywhere we went, he was treated like God. He never got a bill, and he always had a wad of cash, and he left hundreds of dollars in tips. It was kind of like, you know how Mark Messier is like the God of New York?
Yeah.
You know, everyone bows down. Same thing. That was incredible, and it still feels like a dream. And I actually texted him earlier this week after I saw his face on a delivery poster for Perry Street, one of his restaurants. And you know, he's doing well, and he's busy, and I really value that relationship with him, a really instrumental part of my career.
How did you get hooked up with him?
I was the GM at Shambar at the time, approaching sort of my 2-year mark there. And the guys from the Shangri-La came in, and I think I wasn't suspecting that they were looking for a GM. I never really thought about that at all. And he just started chatting me up. And then next thing you know, he sent me an email asking me kind of like a dummy question about OpenTable. And now I realize what he was doing. And of course, in my Amazon-like fashion, I got back to him right away with the right answer and the right connection. And the next thing you know, he's like, let's have coffee. And then they offered me a job. And that was it.
But you were there for what, a year?
Yeah, the Shangri-La experience was a year.
Yeah. Was opening up Lavatoire, was that always in the back of your mind of doing your own business? Or was that something?
Yeah, for sure. It was always a dream. But I... It just, everything, I don't want to say anything was luck, but it just, everything really kind of came together. So I went from the John George position to helping tennis out in Chinatown at Bao Bay, which was amazing because it allowed me to be creative again and be free of the corporate stranglehold. Mm-hmm. I really just couldn't deal with that anymore. And so I helped tennis out for like 4 months. And then while I was helping tennis out, Lee Cooper, who I met at the Shangri-La, gave me a call. And then the stars had sort of aligned on that project. He had sort of kickstarted Laboratoire. And then I came in, you know, well before opening, but we were able to get on the same page right from inception. So it just, the stars really just aligned, to be honest. And that's kind of how everything's gone so far. And I'm not saying that it's been an easy ride because the last 5 years have been really challenging, but I'm quite sure that I'm in the right place and that, you know, myself and the team, we're all doing everything that we can. So it feels good. It feels really good.
So I grew up in a family of five and I'm the second youngest. My mom, bless her heart, she will consistently always tell me that I'm her favorite, which I always think is really funny. I'm always curious, do you have a favorite of the three, Savio or Pepino or Latana?
Whatever one pays me more, I guess. No, I don't have a favorite. I think I look at them all as one. Pino's has always been a little bit of a challenge. The building's very old, and I think that Craig and I were a little bit presumptuous to take this project on. And I think we were, full disclosure, I think we didn't really think it through. I think we were pretty confident, and I kind of want to say we were cocky, and we didn't really think the bones through. We didn't really give that the necessary car wash that it needed to, like we do treat everything else, like we did with Savio. But challenges are fun, and we're dealing with it. Latana has been also an extreme challenge, but we're now getting on the other side of that. We just got a unanimous vote from the city of Vancouver, so we are able to proceed with rezoning to get a liquor license at Cafe Latana. The grocery is doing really well, and Savio, we're really excited to reopen it. But Savio has been amazing. A lot of hard work went into that project, and myself, Craig, and our former partner, Mark Perrier, worked our ass off pre-Savio. We got together for every day for a year, once a week for a year for up to 8 hours sessions at Craig's old office, planning the Savio brand, the food, everything. And it just goes to show you that hard work pays off. And it's been great.
So with that model, Latana, by the way, because I think I've gone there for breakfast numerous times and I love it. It's fantastic. It's a cute little room. I wrote about this a little while ago in the sense of kind of the advancement of kind of the counter service model. Do you foresee that being something that's going to start growing and start being more prevalent in the industry now, especially now after this pandemic, where like, it's a pretty cool model. You kind of have kind of a bit of both worlds. You still do some service, but you have a little bit less of that handling on. Is that something that you guys would maybe look to do more of? Like if you guys were to expand and keep growing?
Yeah, I think opening full-size restaurants right now isn't even on the table. There's a lot of opportunity out there. There's still a lot of landlords and developers that are calling and saying, you know, come to this, do that. And I have really like very little interest in opening up a full-size restaurant. I think it's really a challenging time to make those types of decisions. And also from a financial perspective, you know, borrowing money from the bank is not exactly achievable right now. And I think, like you're saying, developing smaller, you know, makeshift revenue streams that involve more takeout, more counter service, it's definitely it's the future. Mm-hmm. No question about it. The fine dining restaurant establishment, in my opinion, is going to have a really tough time. It's all about, you know, casual. It's all about quickness. People don't want to sit in a restaurant for longer than 90 minutes, guaranteed. And we're going to find that out on Monday when we reopen Savio. But no one wants to sit in a restaurant for longer than 90 minutes. And people are going to want to be in and out with good food, good service, and at fair pricing.
With Savio opening, are you going to still continue doing takeout and delivery?
Yep, we're going to do a dumbed down model of takeout, but we've launched a picnic basket concept at Savio, which is pre-selling really well. Our first night is tonight. And as long as capacity is limited, and right now it's at 50%, we are going to do our best to supplement that revenue with takeout. It's not ideal, but it's something. And like I was saying earlier, I think it's really important as business owners, as restaurant owners, to constantly think about alternative revenue streams to continue to stay afloat, because paying the bills is one thing, but losing money is another. And I tell you, when the chickens come home to roost, i.e. the landlords and the tax man, you better believe you're going to have to pay up. And you're going to need some residual cash flow and ongoing cash flow to make up for the lack of capacity. And you just got to do everything you can right now.
Because I've been thinking about this and talking about it, and I think that one of the maybe silver linings of this whole kind of pandemic is the fact that it's kind of brought a lot of restaurants that normally wouldn't be doing delivery and takeout on the market. And I think, and it's not that I want people not to go dining out, because that's obviously what I don't want, because I love people going out. I think as human beings, we love being social and interacting with each other. But it is interesting to know that now, you know, if I'm a busy person and I don't have time to go for a full-time dinner, I can go and get a delicious meal from Sabio. And I can still get that kind of experience, that good, delicious food and that experience, even if I want to do a takeout. And I think I think that's kind of a nice thing now, because before, you know, takeout delivery was generally reserved for, you know, the pizzas and stuff like that. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, like, and seeing a lot of the creativity coming out, like I was fortunate enough from James Langford Smith and Tanis and Joel Watanabe from Kisa Tanto. They gave me a delicious dinner last Sunday. They had just started doing their takeout delivery service, and it's fantastic. And you would normally have never seen that. I would normally have never had that opportunity to have that kind of that experience at home. So it's interesting, and I'm kind of curious to see how many restaurants are going to keep that going once, you know, full occupancy can be something. So
I don't think anyone has 100% confidence right now going back to eat in restaurants. Mm-hmm. So the takeout is, as you said, a fantastic option for those who still choose to dine at home but still want to support the local business. So it's great all around. It's kind of, like you said, you nailed it. It's a silver lining, and it allows everyone to get that restaurant experience or that restaurant style food.
With opening up of Sabio, are you guys, it's probably going to be like face mask type thing, and then kind of like probably a lot of cleaning. Because I've been reading kind of a lot of the protocols. I'm getting the phone call. I think the hotel we're going to be opening up on June 8th. And I think we're going to be.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, no, we're very excited about that. They're going to be doing the lounge first and then botanist hopefully afterwards. I'm very excited to go back for that. But it's pretty big and heavy handed, a lot of things you guys have to do.
That's right? What it is. I mean, we'll get used to it, and that's just the way it's going to be. And you know, you're better to jump on board and get behind it and make sure your staff feel safe and comfortable, and you give them the right messaging and training. And as far as protocols go, yeah, we're following WorkSafe BC 100%. Plexi where we need it, masks where we need it, hand sanitizer stations, drop-off stations, specific protocol on interaction at the tables, recyclable one-use menus, you know, 100%. You can't mess around with this thing. You got to take it seriously.
I guess finally here, I'm kind of curious, because this is something that's been on my mind. It's one of the first things I wanted to ask you guys. So you have this egg. Paul, is this your egg? This barbecue?
Yeah, this is my egg. It's my egg.
I love it. I've been seeing you guys post about it all the time. And you guys have been posting these massive tomahawk steaks or like these.
It's the silver lining of COVID, my friend. I was on the way delivering healthcare hero meals with Romano one morning and early in the morning. And I drove by Russell Food Equipment. And this is a plug for Russell. And in the window, I saw the egg, a big clearance sign. And I'm like, it's a blessing from God. You know, like I've always wanted one of these things. And I got it. And it's been really fun. Cooking is my therapy. It's like the one thing, it's just my fucking passion. I love it. And it's really fun to learn a new trade or learn new tricks on a big green egg. It's amazing.
Romano, is he a good cook?
You know, I have to say he is a very, very good cook. I'm not sure what he's doing on the front of house side of things. No, you know what? Paul is actually very talented. His steaks are...
My egg cookery is on point.
Yeah, he's...
I constantly am like DMing these guys and being like, hey, like, come on, green egg, like pick me. And it's so much fun. And it's such a cool culture of barbecue. And you can kind of expand it. You can start doing smoking. You can do ribs. You can do brisket. You can do good old fashioned barbecue, like whatever. It's just so fun.
Have you been on the egg too, or is Paul doing all the cooking?
Oh, he's doing all the cooking.
No, Romano's great. He's doing it too. He's doing it too. That thing gets real hot though. Not going to lie. Like I said, Russell Equipment has them on clearance. So I got a steal of a deal, and it's money well spent as far as I'm concerned. I don't wear the fancy suit, so I figure I got to have something, you know?
Well, I did a barbecue the other day. I have a Weber charcoal. So
oh yeah, perfect.
It's been great. We did some burgers on the grill the other day, which was a lot of fun.
Cool.
And Ron Oliver, my good friend from Mammy Taylor's days, and he came over and we had some pina coladas. It was a beautiful day. So
one of the nice. Nice.
I feel like the pina colada gets a bad rap. That's one thing I love about Tannis, the fact that they've gloriously kept that cocktail on at Bao Bay the entire 10-year run that they've been open. So.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so I figured we'd pull some cocktails. So you guys have anything else you guys want to share here today? Anything you guys want to talk about? Any new menu items that are going to be going up on Savio? Or?
I mean, yeah. I mean, for those who don't know, Phil Scarfone has joined us as our culinary director back in just like a month before COVID. I think February was his first few days. And he's been instrumental during this time. He's really synergized properties and his food. Like the guy could cook, like he really can cook, and his menu that he's got coming out on at Savio on Monday, a lot of hits from the past, but a lot of new items that are just right in that Savio wheelhouse. And his team and everyone that's with him, supporting him, cooking alongside of him is just amazing. We couldn't be more excited for this next phase of all of the restaurants and the next growth period that we're all going to be in together. So really excited to have Phil on board. He's been just a machine. And Caitlin has been doing an amazing job at with leading the charge, and all of the frontline associates, Romano, my wife has stepped in, Shani, just the list goes on and on of the amazing people that we have working with us. We've got Harrison down at Pepino's, Thomas, Christian. Really, the list goes on and on. So couldn't be more excited for this next phase.
Nice. Yeah, well, Phil's he was on Canada's Top Best Chef, am I correct?
Sure was.
Yeah, and he's from Nightingale, am I correct? He was at Nightingale.
Yeah, he was with David Hawksworth for I think like eight years.
Yeah, I've met him before. He's actually a really nice guy. My ex-girlfriend, her sister's fiance, Terry Somerville, he's good for
Terry. Hot Terry. Yeah. Hot Terry.
Terry's awesome. I love Terry. They're in Ontario now, but he introduced me to Phil a couple years ago. And I think he's a really cool dude. And I think I saw you guys post some of his takeout lasagnas, which were pretty delicious.
Yeah, he's actually like you should get him on your show. He's like a massive forager. And like I'm sure if he could just live in the forest, he would live in the forest. And that's the cool thing about Phil. He's just a really down to earth guy who can really cook.
He's a mushroom guy.
I mean we've got his morels right now at Latana. They're amazing.
I love it. Yeah, no, I will definitely send her to notice and get him on here. I'd love to. So we need to get more chefs on our show. I think we've had 3 or 4 chefs so far. So we've had,
no, they love to talk, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's because they don't get to. I think that's what it is.
I know, it's good.
Gentlemen, this has been great. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you both in person soon, and coming in. And I will definitely stop by Latana soon. And the Cina spritzes, those are at Savio, or those are going to be at Savio?
Yeah, they're currently at Savio. Yep, you can order for pickup or dine in.
Okay,
and they're there for you.
I think I'll bike by and grab some. I'm very excited that you guys have done well, and that this is this pandemic hasn't dampen your experience as much as it probably should have. I really hope and wish you guys nothing but the best with the businesses and reopening and, you know, continued success. And I mean, everyone loves all the things you guys do. You guys are very busy and very, very, very well respected. And I'm very grateful you guys came on today. And it's always nice to see people in the community are really kind of, you know, banding together, but also, you know, really trying to strive out there and really put out good work. And, you know, we're very grateful that you guys are doing this in the city. So, and,
Jamie, not for nothing. I remember you've been a supporter of mine since, you know, day one at Laboratoire. You know, you would come in for those evening desserts, I think with your partner and maybe with your niece.
I did. I would. And actually, I will say this. This is actually a story I don't tell too many people, but I will say, and I'm not trying to float your boat here, by the way, but you actually did give my favorites you gave me my favorite dining experience ever. And it was not because of, I mean, the whole experience itself was amazing, but you, I think, Romano, what's the word you call it? It's the, how you reference when you think about what Paul would say. What is it? What would Paul do? Is that what it is?
I think so.
Yeah.
What would PG do?
Yeah, what would PG do? That's what it is.
Okay, so it was, this is during Laboratory Days. So it was back probably in 2011, 2012. And I'd met you a few times. And we, you and I have developed a, we developed a good rapport at this point. And I remember it was a Friday night and I was with my girlfriend at the time, and it was like around like 8 o'clock, and we were just, I wanted to come in, and I knew I didn't have a reservation. I was stupidly thinking, oh, I can just see if I can just walk in. And I'd walked in, it was like, and you were really busy. And you'd say, hey, Jamie, how are you? You know, and we're like, oh, I know it's, I don't have a reservation. This is a dumb idea. I'll just kind of see if you guys had any space. And you kind of gave me this look, you're like, you know what? I have an hour. I can get you in an hour. Can you do your whole thing in an hour? That's all I got. You guys got to be out by 9 o'clock. I think that's what it was, or something like that. And I was like, sure, we can do that. And in that hour, you got us full on, you know, cocktail, you got us appetizer, main, dessert, the whole thing. The experience felt great. Didn't feel rushed. And I walked away from that experience. I was like, wow, that was really cool. My girlfriend at the time was like, she's like, wow, that's pretty awesome. So I will say that that was such a memorable experience for me, because I thought, you know, you, instead of just keeping the table empty for an hour, you, and turning me away, you're like, okay, I can do this, but we're gonna have to, you know, you gave me kind of a limit, which I respected, but it was really cool. So yes, I've been a fan of your businesses for a long time. So this has been very, very exciting for me to have you on today.
Well, we really appreciate your support. You've been an amazing client of ours and an amazing advocate for BC restaurants. And I think that I can speak on behalf of, you know, local restaurant associates and owners that without guys like you and Mickey doing your thing and promoting the greater cause, it's just amazing what you guys do. So thank you very much for your efforts and what you supply to the community. And it's really appreciated. And I wish you guys the very best in your next chapter. And keep up the amazing work.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, we started this mostly just so we can talk about basketball. And then we realized we work in the industry, so we probably should just talk about that too. So did you guys watch The Last Dance? Did you guys watch any of that?
Yes, I watched it. I finished it.
Yeah? What'd you think?
I was really young when Jordan was in his prime, so I didn't really know too much about him other than the fact that he was, you know, the best basketball player in history. So it's really nice to see and hear his story and see how motivated he was and how much of a killer instinct that he had. You know, his dedication to his craft is amazing. And I think, you know, it resonates to other industries as well. I mean, I don't think Paul's finished watching it. I think he has only seen the first episode.
I don't have much time these days, but it's incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I think that killer instinct that, you know, Jordan has, I can definitely see in Paul when he's running his restaurants as well. So it's so important.
Well, Jordan was also a bit of an asshole too. But you know what? Everyone that says that, everyone's like, yeah, but nobody else won like him.
Exactly.
Jordan said, there's no... what is it? There's no I in team, but there's an I in win.
Yeah.
And that's like, fuck, 100%, man. You got to fucking win.
Exactly. Are you competitive?
Who's competitive? Am I?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, deadly.
I love it.
You got to be. Deadly. You got to be.
I love that. That's good. I respect people like that. That's awesome. Awesome. Well, we'll leave it on that, because I feel like if we keep going, we'll get those competitive juices started and we'll start talking about them.
Oh, yeah. I'm sitting up on my chair.
Yeah. You got to fire it up, guys.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much for today. You guys have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you soon.